Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The hanky drops in mid-afternoon on the final day, and Florida's 2021 lawmaking session is over. But not before lawmakers pass a record-busting budget.
And I think at the end of the day, we have a budget that we can all be proud of in the state of Florida. I think it has it prepared for the future. I think we've been very measured in our actions.
Also tonight, when the House Appropriations Chair is a North Floridian, it's not surprising that part of the state gets a bigger slice of the Florida budget pie than it's used to.
A goal I've had now 7 years being in the legislature is to make sure that we are looking out for the little guys.
We'll also check in with one of the Florida Capitol's most seasoned observers to find out what he thought of this year's session. I'm Tom Flanagan. The 2021 Florida legislative session is over, and this is Capitol Report. Florida lawmakers have passed their largest budget ever, totaling about $101.5 billion to keep the state running through the next fiscal year. Passing a balanced budget is the only constitutionally mandated task lawmakers must complete each regular session. Valerie Crowder reports an increase in federal stimulus aid boosted this year's spending plan.
Last year, lawmakers didn't have billions of dollars in extra federal stimulus money to include in the state budget. House and Senate budget leaders spent extra time negotiating how the state would spend that cash. Ultimately, they agreed much of it would support environmental and infrastructure projects. It would also help replenish the state's reserves. Here's Senate Appropriations Committee Chairwoman Kelly Stargell speaking on the floor before lawmakers approved the package.
This is a budget put together by all of us, and I appreciate everybody coming together with patience and effort and input, with projects that are important to your area, for the wishes that were important to you for this budget. And I think at the end of the day, we have a budget that we can all be proud of in the state of Florida. I think it has it prepared for the future. I think we've been very measured in our actions. And with that, I think it is a good budget. It's great budget staff. Everyone's worked together.
House Appropriations Committee Chairman Jay Trumbull has worked alongside Stargell in crafting a balanced budget. Trumbull gave an overview of what the proposed budget covers during a floor debate on the spending plan Thursday.
We make good, smart, good government investments into programs that provide lasting benefits for generations. This includes unprecedented infrastructure funding, record investments into beach renourishment, manatees, bonuses for teachers and frontline workers, and significant investments for our developmentally disabled and elderly.
The legislature's proposed budget reaches $101.5 billion. That's up nearly $10 billion from last year's budget. Trumbull explained that's largely due to federal pandemic relief aid.
Most of this increase is related to $6.9 billion federal funds that the state has received and for the federal share of spending for the highest Medicaid caseload in Florida's history.
House report on healthcare spending shows about 4.5 million residents receive Medicaid insurance in Florida. The Republican-controlled legislature has still refused to expand coverage to those who would qualify under the Affordable Care Act. But South Florida GOP Representative Brian Avila says the budget proposal does include a plan to spend almost $240 million to lengthen Medicaid coverage for new mothers from 2 months to 1 year after giving birth.
This will provide Medicaid-covered women with comprehensive health care coverage for a full year after pregnancy and childbirth.
Governor Ron DeSantis has the power to cross out any spending item before he signs the budget into law. Last year, he removed $1 billion from lawmakers' proposed budget. The fiscal year begins on July 1st. I'm Valerie Crowder.
North Florida is often an afterthought when people think about the state as a whole. The same often holds true during the legislative session when money is doled out for member projects. Part of this is tied to representation and population. There are more people in South and Central Florida. That means more representation in the legislature. But this session, the House Appropriations Chair was Panama City Republican Representative Jay Trumbull. Blaise Ganey caught up with him and a Democratic North Florida representative to hear how they work together to ensure more money for their parts of the Florida Panhandle.
Oftentimes, North Florida can be overlooked since there aren't as many delegates compared to more densely populated areas in the state. How does it help the region now that a North Floridian is chairman of the House Appropriations Committee?
That's a great point. I say this a lot when I'm talking to folks back home, that there are 20-some members in the Miami-Dade delegation, and there's only 8 members in the Central Time Zone, including the House and the Senate. I'm very conscious of the fact that Northwest Florida needs a lot of support, and so one of my goals, a goal I've had now 7 years being in the legislature, is to make sure that we are looking out for the little guys, right? The ones that that don't have a tremendous amount of, there's not a significant amount of members that are up here advocating, which is why it's helpful to have somebody like Ramon Alexander to be able to work alongside. And he's a tremendous advocate for, his communities.
Representative Alexander, what were some of the projects you were able to get through this session?
One of the things that I'm extremely excited about is the funding that we've been able to secure for Gaston County. We were able to secure funding for a Gaston County mobile health unit. There are a lot of rural areas throughout Gaston County where it's very difficult to get to. And so instead of having the people come to us, we're going to make sure to go to the people to make sure that they have the adequate resources and services. So we're able to secure close to $500,000 in the budget for Gaston County to secure a mobile health unit.
I know that mobile health unit has been in the works for a while. What are some other big ticket items in your area?
Securing funding for Chattahoochee, a mountain bike trail, securing funding for Quincy, for the fire department, well over $755,000 in funding for that project, and as well as a lot of transportation dollars, millions of dollars that we have in the budget that will go towards new roads and other infrastructure projects. And so I'm excited as we move forward.
How much help was it having a fellow North Floridian as the chair of appropriations?
Well, I will say this. I've always had a good relationship with members in the appropriation process and with our appropriations chairs. We've been able to do some significant work securing millions of dollars throughout the district. One particularly getting $24.8 million, the largest single PICO project in the history of FAMU several years ago through that process. But I will say that the Panhandle members, we do stick together. We're small in number, but we're strong in might because we have a certain reflective values and principles.
Trumbull, the appropriations chairman, has also managed to steer millions of dollars towards septic, sewer, and water system treatment expansion to the region, which is still recovering from Hurricane Michael. I'm Blaise Ganey.
Florida motorists are one step closer to no longer having no-fault auto insurance. That's after lawmakers today approved ditching the decades-old system and its requirement of carrying personal injury protection coverage. The House and Senate signed off on a heavily negotiated bill in the closing hours of the 2021 lawmaking session. If the bill is signed by Governor Ron DeSantis or allowed to become law without his signature, the requirement for carrying so-called PIP coverage would end and motorists would need to have bodily injury coverage. The Florida Capitol may have seemed deserted during this year's session due to COVID precautions, but few of those were much in evidence during the closing ceremonies in the building's rotunda today. The overall mood was festive, but not everyone was celebrating. Here's Broward County Democratic House member Evan Jenny.
This was not a good year. If it were not for the Biden administration, this would have been one of the worst budget years the state has ever faced. So I see a lot of backslapping and a lot of, hey, didn't we do great? No, you didn't do great. It was a bad session.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Governor DeSantis is planning to sign off on election law changes that are opposed by Democrats and voting rights groups.
I believe that every legal vote should count. I believe one fraudulent vote is one too many. And I'm trying to protect the sanctity of our elections.
Proponents of a purple alert for Florida say the proposal will help fill a gap in the missing persons alert system.
We have a whole subset of people between 20 and 60 with cognitive disabilities who weren't covered.
Special Capitol reporter Steve Bosquet gives his take on how this year's legislative session turned out.
If you like Ron DeSantis, you love the outcome of this legislative session because the governor got pretty much everything he wanted.
And a bill barring vaccine passports is on the way to the governor's desk. But some worry the measure leaves people who have been vaccinated open to discrimination.
Can you imagine being discriminated against because you followed the CDC guidelines?
Governor Ron DeSantis says he will sign a bill amending Florida's election laws. The move follows the 2020 presidential cycle. The left-leaning Brennan Center for Justice says more than 45 states have proposed election changes since March. Lynn Hatter reports the Florida legislation follows disproven claims of voter fraud in other states by former President Donald Trump.
Florida's election made headlines in November, not unusual because the state usually does, for the number of problems it often has administering balloting. But last year was different, as the news was largely positive. Governor Ron DeSantis has taken credit for the nearly problem-free cycle. Republican Representative Blaise Ingoglia says the election law changes sent to the governor build on that success.
We have guardrails on in-person voting, but we have zero guardrails on vote by mail. All we're doing is putting guardrails. We are not restricting anyone's access to the ballot.
Democratic State Representative Tracy Davis asks, why fix what's not broken?
This bill, this amendment, is a slap in the supervisors of elections' faces after an election that you say, we say, was one of the best we've had.
Davis would know. She's a former deputy election supervisor for Duval County. The Florida House and Senate debated the bill much of the last week of the legislative session, with the Republican majority coming to an agreement late Thursday night. The final version of the bill is much changed from the original, but it still contains language around ballot drop boxes, limiting them to early voting only and mandating they be monitored. Vote-by-mail requests would be good for one election cycle only, not two, as currently allowed, and that means that voters will have to request mail ballots every cycle. Democratic Senator Tina Pulsky of Boca Raton says Democrats can't help but be cynical about the bill.
For the first time, the Democrats outvoted the Republicans in vote-by-mail ballots. So what's the first thing that happens in this bill? We change vote-by-mail. We got rid of all the mail requests that existed. We made it a shorter time frame. Then we made vote-by-mail drop boxes harder to access. And so that's what we feel the intent is of this bill.
The proposal limits who can return vote-by-mail ballots, restricts people from handing out items to voters within 150 feet of a polling site, and would allow the governor to appoint replacements for lawmakers who resigned to run for other offices. This late addition has caught the eye of Broward Democratic Senator Chevron Jones. Broward is the home seat of the late Congressman Alcee Hastings, whose death has set off a scramble for his replacement.
And so eliminating the resign to run election provision, I believe, is a total power grab. And under the current law, when a local elected resigns to run for office, the voters fill that seat by holding an election. The rule should not be coming from Tallahassee. The people should be the ones to decide who they want to represent them.
The proposal changes the signature verification process and contains language around who can observe the ballot counting process. Democrats note there are similar election proposals across the country and that they follow former President Donald Trump's false claims of election fraud. Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Perry Thurston chastised his GOP colleagues.
It's not like you don't know that we know that 37 other states are doing the same thing as we're doing it here. So it's not that we think that you or us or this legislature is leading in this regard. We don't think that we're leaders. This is not leading. This is following.
Republican Senator Travis Hudson pushes back, saying that while Florida's last election went well, lawmakers shouldn't be satisfied with that.
I believe that every legal vote should count. I believe one fraudulent vote is one too many. And I'm trying to protect the sanctity of our elections. And with that, I look forward to your favorable support.
The measure cleared on largely party line votes in both chambers. It's one of the last major priority pieces of legislation and among the most contentious approved in the 2021 lawmaking session. I'm Lynn Hatter.
A proposal to create a purple alert for missing adults with certain disabilities or brain injuries is heading to the governor's desk. Robbie Gaffney reports the proposal is for people who have cognitive, developmental, physical, or emotional disabilities, as well as those with brain injuries who go missing and cannot be returned safely without law enforcement intervention.
According to the bill, a person's disappearance must also indicate a credible threat of immediate danger or serious bodily harm to themselves. Beverly Marshall is supporting the proposal after she lost her son, Josh.
He got out of his father's house and he had wandered for several hours. I came to a 7-Eleven and was out in front of that gas station for well over an hour.
Marshall says Josh had a cognitive disability. She says people saw him at the 7-Eleven, but they assumed he had been drinking.
He was distraught and he was crying. He could not ask people for help. He couldn't speak or write. He wandered across the street from that 7-Eleven to a manned fire station, and he drowned in a pond about 30 feet from there, from that fire station.
Marshall says if a purple alert had been in place, her son might still be alive.
Now, I know that most families who have members of their family that have cognitive disabilities, this is their biggest fear, is that their loved one will get out of the house and will get lost and something bad will happen.
Margaret Hooper is with the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council. She says some people with developmental disabilities can be attracted to water.
So if they get out, unfortunately, there's a high incidence of drowning.
Hooper says families sometimes use a variety of tools to make sure their loved ones don't find themselves in dangerous situations alone.
First of all, you hope that your school system has a procedure for exceptional students who may elope, and most of them do. And then you can use devices, electronic devices that can help you locate your child should they go. That's another option.
Hooper says she's heard positive feedback from families regarding the Purple Alert proposal.
You know, anything you can put out there to help us, we appreciate, was the feedback that I got.
After Marshall's son died, one of her friends told her story to Boynton Beach Democratic Senator Lori Berman, who then decided to sponsor the measure. This is the third year it's been introduced. Berman says the Purple Alert will help fill a gap in the current alert system.
The Amber Alert goes to age 20. The Silver Alert starts at age 60. But we have a whole subset of people between 20 and 60 with cognitive disabilities who weren't covered.
Silver Alerts can cover people 18 to 59 years old if they lack the capacity to consent and if the alert is the only possible way to rescue them. It also covers people with Alzheimer's and dementia. Berman says she was questioned whether adding another alert to the system was a good idea, but she says the Purple Alert will save lives, an idea that gained bipartisan support.
Because people understand. Everybody knows people who have cognitive disabilities, mental disabilities, and they want their family and their friends to be protected if, God forbid, they elope or wander away. So there was never any problem about this bill being viewed as anything other than a bipartisan bill.
Berman hopes Governor Ron DeSantis will sign the bill when it gets to his desk. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
On this final day of the regular legislative session in the state of Florida for 2021, it seems more than appropriate that we check back in for one final time with Steve Bosquet, who has been following the action at the Capitol as well as can be expected, given some rather, should we say, extraordinary circumstances here, Steve. Well, this is the final day. And just what do you think are some of the highlights and perhaps even some of the lowlights of this legislative session for Florida?
Well, the session's ending on time. I guess that's a good thing, Tom. But it's still a surreal atmosphere here. There are all these TV camera tripods set up for the sign-y-die, you know, dropping of the handkerchief and the self-congratulatory rhetoric you get after every session. But the building is essentially deserted. There's hardly anybody here from the general public, which is the way it's been for the past 60 days. As I've written in a number of Sun Sentinel pieces, you know, it's excessively locked down, this building is. And to the very end, they're fighting over in the House, they're fighting over this issue of discrimination and banning transgender athletes from competing in women's sports.
This, however, was not an issue that was really endemic to Florida. In fact, there apparently is only, I think, one of those cases nationally, which was, I believe, in Connecticut, that has engendered a lot of the controversy and dispute over this thing. So, again, what did this have to do with Florida? Has anyone been able to say?
No, except that it's a good talking point to take onto the campaign trail. You know, I've covered more than 30 sessions. I've never seen a session that has been so dominated by issues that are really not Florida-specific stuff. And Ron DeSantis, the governor, set the tone on the opening day of the session. You go back and look, the three major points in his State of the State address to the legislature on March 2nd were the so-called anti-riot bill to crack down on protests, the, quote, big tech bill to punish social media companies for alleged censorship and for the deplatforming of conservative views, and changes to the election laws, like making it harder to use drop boxes and mail ballots. And guess what? All three of those things happened. Ron DeSantis, from his perspective, if you like Ron DeSantis, you love the outcome of this legislative session, because the governor got pretty much everything he wanted.
So mission accomplished, if we could use a phrase that was coined, I think, by a previous Republican president on the deck of an aircraft carrier many, many years ago, Steve. I really appreciate everything that you've done for us here at WFSU Public Media and for other public radio stations in Florida, keeping track of all of this on a very remarkable kind of session. And certainly we'll be checking back in with you because the legislature is due to return to Tallahassee in just a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Special session on gambling. Tom, thanks for the good words. I enjoy being part of the team at WFSU so much and want to continue our partnership.
We will do that. Thank you, Steve Bosquet. And get a little bit of rest following the dropping of the hanky. Of course, as they say, if they drop the hanky and no one is there to see it, does the session really end?
I know. It's a good point. Like you said, though, they're dropping the handkerchief, but not for long. This special session on gambling is going to be contentious. It's not going to be as easy as people might think. And they're back here on Monday, May 17th.
Can't wait to hear your reporting on that one, Steve. Steve Bosquet, our special reporter here on Capitol Report. Thanks for a great session, Steve.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a measure banning so-called vaccine passports is on its way to the governor's desk. Republican supporters say people shouldn't be barred from going to work or entering stores because of a personal choice not to get the coronavirus vaccine. But some Democrats have raised concerns the measure doesn't protect people who have been vaccinated from facing discrimination. Regan McCarthy has more.
Deciding whether to get the coronavirus vaccine is a personal choice. Zephyr Hills Republican Senator Danny Burgess says a person shouldn't have to disclose whether they've been vaccinated. before they can go to work or go grocery shopping.
This boils down to choice. This boils down to an individual's ability to choose whether or not to receive a vaccine. This vaccine is much different than a lot of other vaccines in that it's been something that's been put forward rather quickly. And so there are families out there, as we all know, I'm sure, who may be at this time, I don't want to say reluctant, but choosing not to get the vaccine either now or in the future. And so what we are doing is recognizing that choice.
Earlier this month, Governor Ron DeSantis issued an order that bars businesses from requiring proof of vaccination for entry. Similar language is now part of Burgess's bill, but Miami Democratic Senator Jason Pizzo says the measure leaves out one important thing: protection for people who choose to get vaccinated. He says a school in his district has barred vaccinated teachers from returning to work.
If we're going to include something that says, I don't have to show you proof that I've been vaccinated, then parity and fairness would follow. That surely all of us are encouraged and have been encouraging our family members and our friends to follow good science and encourage people to get vaccinated so we can reopen, so we can live our lives. Did you honestly think that there was going to be a business that would say, you cannot work here anymore, teachers? Telling your teachers that if you choose to get vaccinated, you are not allowed to work here anymore.
St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis agrees. Brandis says protecting people who have been vaccinated is just logical.
Can you imagine being discriminated against because you followed the CDC guidelines? Because you got a vaccine and were doing everything the government told you to do, but then your employer tells you, I'm sorry, you can't work here because you tried to save your life by getting a vaccine.
Brandis says it feels, in his words, almost insane that the Senate needs to debate whether to protect people from discrimination who have followed government advice.
Let's show that the Senate is not insane, that we're reasonable people, and that we're not going to allow businesses to prevent somebody from working there for doing exactly what we told them that they should do.
Bill sponsor Danny Burgess says he understands the concern, but he worried a last-minute change could derail the rest of the measure.
Given how far we've come and how needed so many of the other provisions are within this bill, that we just don't add this to this long-negotiated work product.
Burgess says if discrimination against people who have been vaccinated is still a problem next session, he'll work together with Pizzo to address it. The vaccine passport provision is just one part of a much broader bill. The measure also includes language that would let the governor override a local government's emergency order if the governor doesn't agree with it. It would also limit how long an emergency order can be in place and would, in many cases, require both state and local governments to provide explanations for their orders. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Robbie Gaffney, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. We also extend most sincere thanks to Steve Bosquet, Kevin Del Orbe, and various contributors from Florida's other public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we return to a weekly Capitol Report schedule. We hope you'll continue to join us then and every week thereafter for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News and World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag.